This is Scott.
This is Pat.
Hey, stick around for today's Handsome Acclaims Money Matters because we have a great program. One of the things we're talking about is some fad investment that's coming out. And I know you'll be interested in what we're talking about there.
We're going to talk a little bit about why complicated is not better. In fact, oftentimes it's worse for your portfolio.
And how some changes the Securities Exchange Commission is considering may actually impact the small investor and not in a good way. Stick around for Handsome Acclaim.
Answering your top financial questions with a little humor and a lot of fun. It's Handsome Acclaim's Money Matters.
Welcome to Handsome Acclaim's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McClain.
Glad you're with us today. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors. Now, wait, before you turn the station thinking, oh my gosh, a couple
of
financial advisors.
Not another one of these guys.
This show's a little bit different, we'd like to think anyway. We've been broadcasting this program out of Northern California for over 20 years. And if you've listened to Handsome Acclaim's Money Matters at all in the past, you'll know that we don't take our clients, our callers' issues lightly, but we tend to take life a little lightly and try to have fun with some things.
It is the weekend.
Yes.
It is the weekend.
And if it's a podcast you listen to, you're doing it on your time.
Yeah. So it is what it is.
In the middle of a work day.
But we take phone
calls.
When
your boss isn't around.
We take phone calls and we answer questions and we try to explain it in layman's terms. And I always kind of stick with this when we started the show 21 years ago, I always used to say, I want to explain it so that my mother would understand what I'm talking about. And I've kind of lived by that with not only the radio show, but in meetings with clients, which is, we can use big technical jargon and make it look really complicated, or we could actually just use simple examples to make it understandable. And that's what
we try to
do here.
Well, not only that, you know, it's interesting, Pat. I mean, one thing I think the longer I'm in this industry, been doing 20 some odd years, I'm 50 years old, and I hope to do it, frankly, till the day I drop dead, to some aspect.
And as your business partner, I hope you do it till the day you drop dead as well.
Because you're retiring tomorrow. It doesn't have to be complicated to be successful.
That is right.
And sometimes the more simplified one's financial life is, the better their overall life is. Yeah. I was on a panel, I don't know, 6 months ago or so in San Francisco for this conference. And the guy next to me is a financial advisor who dealt with ultra high net worth individuals. I think their minimum account balance was $50 million or something like that. That was his specialty. And he stated that the average client had 30 different investments in his firm. They would have 30 different investments. They did a lot of hedge funds, private equities, those are all fine and dandy, but they're also very complicated. They are limited partnership structures.
There's lots of contracts to be done and reviewed.
Yes, very hard to unwind.
Not liquid.
Very difficult to unwind. And he's telling me this. I'm thinking, you know, most of these people that have $50 million or more, they got those dollars because of a business that they had. Right?
That's correct.
I mean,
that's correct.
9 times out of 10.
Yeah, they inherited it or they built a business.
Most likely they built the business. They sold either all of the business or some portion of the business.
Yeah,
most of the time.
Or they were part of a business structure that allowed
And I'm just sitting there thinking, how in the world does this make these people's lives better by having a super complicated financial picture?
Where they could get to the same place with a lot less complication.
Correct.
But maybe,
so whether you have $50 million or $5 million
or $500,000 or $50,000, you can make it as complicated or
as
simple.
It doesn't necessarily. I remember talking to another guy. I was at a conference.
How many conferences do you go to? It's businessman's jail, if you ask me. That's what conferences are. Businessman's jail. You've done nothing wrong. You've been unlawfully incarcerated in a conference room.
Pat, I've been to a conference with Pat. He never stays the entire conference.
I
don't care. Oh, we've been in the middle of a session. He just gets up and walks out. And the next thing I see him walking down with a suitcase. He's like, I'm out of here. I got a plane or going home.
I know.
My point was, this gentleman
escaped from businessman's jail.
Okay. This guy had sold a business. He put 100% of his proceeds in an S&P 500 index fund.
Okay. Wouldn't necessarily promote that, but it's
no,
a concept.
But, you know, it's interesting. I'm talking to this guy. He says, yeah, it might not have been the perfect strategy, But I did this, and this was a long time ago. He told me, I did this like 9 years ago, and it's working out just fine. I just live on some of the dividends. It seems to be working out just fine. Maybe it's not perfect, but it's the strategy that works for me. And I walked away, and I had tremendous respect for him. And I thought, you know, it's the strategy that works for him. Very simple. He could tell you that's how he liked things.
And he's only living on 2.5% of his corp, which makes it that much easier.
Correct.
Right?
Get plenty of assets.
Which
was my point. Just because you have a lot of assets does not
have to
make
it complicated.
And I thought, I would take that. You give the two options. You have more money than you need, putting it all in an S&P 500 index fund or having 30 different type of holdings. I would take the S&P 500.
You know what's funny? So my son calls me. He's 21. You know, Connor, he's pretty industrial. He's really industrious.
This kid, Connor, cracks me up because Pat would tell me when he was younger, he'd make it, you know, the neighbor would pay him 10 bucks a day to feed the dog, and he'd subcontract it out to his younger siblings at $5.
Yeah, he would.
So he didn't actually have to do the work.
Yeah, he would. So, but he called me the other day and he said, Dad, I'm looking at these robo advisors, and I've done some research and I'm looking at the three, and he gives me the names of the firm. And he says, what do you think about their fee structure and what they're doing? And I said, well, first of all, Connor, they're not giving you advice. They're asset allocation modeling.
Not advisors.
They're not advisors. I said, that's just a word they give themselves. And second of all, what are you trying to do? And he said, well, what do you mean? I said, what are you trying to, what do you want these dollars to do? He said, I'm just going to take like $5,000 and invest it. I'm like, good for you. You're 21. You got $5,000 to invest. He said, I just want to do it. I said, don't mess with all that. Don't make it more complicated. Just go buy the total market index. You got $5,000. You don't really quite know. I said, are you going to invest it for at least 5 years? He said, yeah, I think so. I said, just go buy the total market index, low cost ETF or index fund and call it a day.
Yeah, even less expensive.
Well, he said, I want to talk about these robo-advisors. I said, you asked me a question. I'm just answering it for you.
Well, at least you got your son is curious about your advice.
That's a good point. Yes. And then I totally blew him off.
I know.
I said, either take my advice or go away.
I give my kids advice and they roll their eyes
and
at
I
me.
Said, I love you, son.
All right. Hey, we're going to take some calls here because this program, we take calls regarding lots of financial matters, whether you've got a retirement question, an investment question, tax question, real estate question. Love to take your call. And to join Hanson McLean, call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766.
And we're going to take some calls. And after these calls, we're going to talk about the first ever marijuana-based exchange-traded fund. So
not to necessarily promote the fund.
Just
but
this, the idea is the risk associated in investing. Yeah. And we're also going to talk a little bit about what is the redefinition of an accredited investor.
Now, that's exciting, Tom.
Listen, if you don't want to stay tuned for accredited investment talk,
something's wrong.
Something's wrong.
Anyway, it is actually interesting. So let's start off and talk with Diane in San Francisco. Diane, you're with Hanson McLean.
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thanks, Diane.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes. How can we help?
Well, I'm in a quandary on what to do. I'm 73 years old, and I have around $200,000 in just a money market, and then $70,000 Roth, and bought the same thing, and the rest in stocks. But I wanted to generate some income, and I was I'm not sure whether to do an annuity, or just take a certain amount out of the $100,000 each month.
What other income do you have now?
Retirement plan with the government, but that's not very much. It's
how much?
Month.
$1,000?
Yes.
And are you receiving Social Security?
Yeah, but that's only $100 a month.
Okay. And do you own a home?
No, no, we rent. Okay.
When you said we, are you married or?
No, I have a boyfriend.
Okay. So you have $200,000.
Where did the $100,000 in the money market come from?
That actually was inherited from my mom.
How long ago?
She passed away about 4 years ago.
Okay. And have you been spending any of that $200,000 to live on?
I had additional $50,000 that I saved up myself, but my stepdad and my mom both got sick, and for a long time, and I pretty much went through that taking them.
Okay, so are you taking any monthly income or annual or quarterly income off this $200,000 in any way, shape, or form?
No, it's just, you know, those.
How you manage to live now on $1,100 a month in San Francisco?
Well, I live with my boyfriend, so he gets about a similar amount every month, and we're in a rent-controlled apartment, so.
Okay.
That's, you know, we've been here for 40 years. And
okay. So, I don't think I would recommend an annuity, but I would recommend you taking.
I don't know. You know, Ed, there's every once in a while.
So tell me, Scott, why?
An immediate annuity.
With this $100,000.
To provide some additional income that she cannot outlive regardless of what happened.
How old was your mother or father when they passed away?
I know it'd be nice for planning purposes if we came with an expiration date, but my mom was 90 when she passed away, and my stepdad was 80, but my biological father was in his early 60s.
And you're, how old, 74? Is that what you said?
I'm 73, but I have some health problems, so
okay.
I don't think I'm going to last as long as my mother. I mean, we're practically a genetic blueprint, but I don't think I'm going to make it to 90.
Well, do you care about your, I shouldn't say do you care about your heirs. We all should care about our heirs a little, some more than others. Do you have any heirs that you would like money to go to? Children? Nieces, nephews, anything like that?
No, not really.
Okay.
My niece and she's very well off. So
if you believed you had a normal than average life expectancy, an immediate annuity might actually be a good case for you here. And you got a guarantee. A relatively high yield, because you give control, you give up your principal.
Yes.
But it's a relatively high yield the older you get.
So she's 74, Scott. So what would be wrong with buying a 10-year immediate annuity right now and use $100,000 of that?
And not touch the rest.
And not touch the
rest. I like that idea.
And name your boyfriend as the beneficiary. And on all the accounts, put your boyfriend as POD and ask him to do the same to you, which means payment on death.
Correct.
So,
yeah.
So Scott, what do you think of that concept? So that way, if you bought a 10-year immediate annuity, it would give you about $800 a month or so.
Yeah, a little more than that, probably.
Yeah, about.
And then if you don't touch the other dollars,
then if they even grow modestly,
yeah.
You can do it again if need be.
Yeah, 10 years out,
and that way it's not a life annuity, but it's going to pay more than a life annuity because
you only use half your assets,
and you have a compromise.
I actually like that idea.
I would do it. And if you were my older sister,
yeah.
Or my mother, or my great aunt, this is exactly the advice I would do now. How would I have her go about purchasing that immediate annuity? Do you throw her to the wolves and tell her to go to the bank and talk to one of those people in the corner?
I'd look online for immediate annuity quotes.
10-year immediate annuity quote.
Yeah, 10-year immediate annuity.
Yeah, do that.
All you care about is a U.S.-based insurance company with moderately decent ratings. They don't even have to be the highest because they insure each other.
Yeah, I like that. And then you don't even, just go for the one. It might be direct with the insurance company. It might not have a broker touch
right.
it at all.
It won't be a broker. I mean, if they're good marketers on the internet, they have their own marketing expenses, but
that's
what I would do. 10-year immediate annuity.
And then I would ask my boyfriend, start with, hey, let's put each other.
And don't touch the other dollars for 10 years.
Yeah.
And if something happens, you get sick or something, you need the cash earlier,
you get the other 100 grand and ask, make sure that you put your boyfriend as a payment on death on those accounts to him and ask him to do the same.
Already is.
Oh, perfect.
And it could be the beneficiary on the 10-year.
Yeah, easy, breezy, like this. And you get more money to spend. Holy smokes, you're 74 years of age. Get out and live a little.
Right. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. So 10 years, and then when the 10 years up is, I guess all these.
Not an equity index annuity deferred annuity.
You're buying a 10-year immediate annuity.
Immediate annuity.
Immediate.
Immediate annuity. It means you give up the $100,000 in exchange for monthly payments over the next 10 years. So at the end of 10 years, the payments are going to end, but that's okay because your other $100,000, the Roth and the stocks,
will have grown to some. Now, let's walk this back a little bit for the rest of the listeners because many people are listening and they say, oh, I think that's a great idea. What was different? What was different about Diane than it is for a lot of other people? One is that she didn't actually have heirs that she cared where the money went to. So it was okay to use up the principal, right?
Yeah.
One is, and that her expenses are, she's living in a rent-controlled.
Yeah.
Right?
Safety of rent control.
And we didn't use all of her money.
Half.
Yeah. And we only did it for 10 years, and it wasn't an index annuity. It was an immediate annuity. So one of the rare cases that we would actually recommend this.
Yes.
But I think it's a great idea, Diane.
I like it. Yes. Okay.
All right. Alrighty. Wish you well, Diane.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you much.
Yeah, thanks. And we always like to recommend to people this is this what we might advise one individual is not necessarily advise everybody. And frankly, it's not this is a suggestion, doesn't necessarily constitute a client engagement with an investment advisory firm
too. And I can't remember the last time I have recommended an immediate annuity to a person. I cannot.
Every once in a while, they make sense.
I can.
You can then, okay. 2000, I mean, there's a time.
2009.
There's a time when this is a... Yeah.
8 years ago.
Every situation's unique. That's why you're talking to your neighbor, says one thing. Well, it might be perfect for your neighbor, but it might not be the perfect thing for you.
Yes. And that's why homes are decorated in many different ways, and there's many different colors of paint for houses.
Well, I do, but I appreciate going to Pat's house because he has the Elvis plates on the one wall and the spoon collection on the other. And then the American President dolls, I think, rounds out the house.
The Franklin Mint.
And the Franklin Mint.
The Franklin Mint. Nothing better.
Yeah. All right. Our contact number to be part of the program, 1-888-2-HANSON. We'll get you on Hanson McLean. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're in Denver talking with Bob. Bob, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, gentlemen. It's great to talk with you today.
Thank you, sir.
I had a question. Last year, I had about 2016, I had about $75,000 in cash that was sitting in a checking account that was not earning any interest. So the second half of last year, I did a little homework and I split it up. I put about $45,000 in a company, basically a mutual fund type company. And then the other $25,000 I put into a company that was promoting some special logarithmic type formula they use, and they projected a 12% to 20% earnings.
So Bob,
yes, sir.
So you started with how much money? I thought you said 275.
No, 75.
75. So you put $45,000 in a mutual fund, and $25,000 in some sort of trading scheme that did between 12% and 20%. That's what they said.
That's what they said.
And did you get a choice between the 12 or 20? Or did they I mean, if they can predict 12% of returns. Okay, so tell me how it all worked out.
Well, end of last year, I took the money out of the mutual fund and basically made a few dollars, you know, maybe $1,000 on the $45,000. And then presently, I'm looking to take the money out of this company where I have $25,000. Right now, my money is down to $22,600.
Okay.
So I've lost money in that.
So the 12 to 20% wasn't real.
It wasn't for me anyway.
Yeah, that's because they can't. While they can say they could predict this stuff, they cannot predict this stuff. And anyone, I'm not just talking with you, Bob. I'm talking to all our listeners. If anyone ever says that they could predict where the markets are going, run away. What they can talk about is probabilities of outcome and historical rates of return with given risk parameters. Nothing is predictive in this. Even our risk assessments are based on historical rates of return and activity in the marketplace. So The money was in the bank to begin with. What prompted you to take it out of the bank and invest like this? And had you done such a thing in the past? Have you ever invested like this in the past?
No, I have not.
Ever?
No. And the only reason why I did is because it wasn't making any, it wasn't growing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the challenge. You know what?
What's that, Bob?
I have the same problem this year. I will probably be up to $100,000 in cash or higher this year. And where does one go to get hopefully a 3-6% return? On liquid cash.
On risk-free returns.
Here's the challenge. You know what's interesting, Bob, and I feel for you, honestly, because, I mean, I've been around long enough to, probably not as long as you've been on the earth, it sounds like, but you clearly remember days when you could earn 5% on a savings account or maybe even 10% in a CD, maybe even more. If you go back to the 80s, they were much higher than that, right? So there was certainly a time that we have all enjoyed where we could earn decent returns on just money parked in the bank. And as the Federal Reserve has cut rates, at least they did, lower and lower and lower, it got to the point where the banks were paying almost nothing, right? And so you're sitting there, you've got cash in the bank, and you're like,
what am I going to do with this?
Well, this isn't prudent.
So how old are you, Bob?
I'm 70.
And do you owe money to anyone on a home mortgage, credit cards, car, anything like that?
Not really.
You owe no one money?
I occasionally use our credit card, but we pay it off. And
so you have now $100,000 in liquid cash that you're looking to invest. Is that correct?
I'm looking to get at least let it grow a little.
Okay.
Or on a short-term basis, unless I find a long-term investment. But I haven't.
But you've never invested in stocks or mutual funds?
What was wrong with the mutual funds you had that group made $1,000?
Well, I guess I expected a higher return than that. And, of course, this is before Trump won the election, so I know things have changed.
But you weren't invested very long.
I took my money out just before the election.
Yeah, you weren't even invested 12 months. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so have you ever invested in stocks or mutual funds historically? In your 70 years on Earth, have you ever bought a mutual fund before, or a stock or a bond?
I probably did when I was in my 30s.
Okay, but you hadn't been allocating to a 401k or anything over your lifetime, so you have no history in this, correct?
No.
Okay, so here's what I want you to do. I want you to take your money out of that supposed 12 to 20%. I want you to get rid of all of that stuff. I don't think you have a place for investing like this. And the reason is you're throwing darts at a board without a plan. And so you're a man on a mission without a map. I don't know if you need to put any risk in your portfolio. I think what you're trying to be is a good steward of your money and try to make it grow as much as possible. But with that becomes associated risk of investing. And I don't know if you have the risk tolerance nor the desire to withstand any risk in the portfolio, because there's no plans for this money. You don't have any plans of spending them, correct?
Not really.
So if you were sitting in my office, I would ask, why are you doing this? And when we ask you why you're doing it, you said, because I want a higher rate of return. Why do you want a higher rate of return?
So I should be satisfied with just keeping it in the bank?
Yep. Because you don't want any of the risk associated with the higher rate of returns.
And the fact is, maybe it sounds like you probably don't need to take on that additional risk.
And it's okay to take risk, as long as it's calculated risk and you understand why you're taking it. And so you're not going to be satisfied with what you're getting in the bank. I'm not asking you to be satisfied with what you're getting in the bank. I'm not satisfied with what I'm getting in the bank. But I understand why I'm getting that and the consequences of going further up the risk ladder. Anything that pays higher than a bank CD or a short-term U.S. government fund
has some risk.
Has some risk. And that's okay. It's okay to do that. The question is, do I have a reason to do it? Do I know why I'm doing it?
And an understanding and the patience to let the investment do its thing.
Correct. Because had you left those mutual funds alone, you wouldn't be making this phone call right now.
You're right.
You wouldn't be making the phone call. So if I were you, I'd go online. I'd use if you're comfortable, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to talk about online banks. I would look at an Ally Bank or Synchrony Bank, which are online banks that pay the highest rates in the money market.
Yeah. And so, Bob, look, I feel fine about your situation. You've obviously done
well. You've done well.
You got money saved. It's sitting in the bank. Be happy. I mean, at least the money's safe there. You know, it's not going to go down. You're not going to get a negative return. Anyway, we're taking a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean.
To be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-242-6766.
All right, we're back with Hanson McLean. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLean.
And we're going to go back to the calls in a moment if you want to join us. Our contact number to be part of the program is 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766.
And if you'd like to receive this on a podcast, Scott, how would you go about getting this show on a podcast?
Well, Pat, funny you should ask.
Well, I'm only asking because I don't remember. Go to Hanson, pretending to be a radio guy.
Go to HansonMcLean.com. Actually, HansonMcLean.com, if you haven't been there in a while, we've revamped our website. I say we. I'll take the credit. Although the marketing team at Hanson McLean, the fantastic group of people that we have, did a lot of work. It's a new website. If you've not been there in a while, there you can sign up for our podcast. You can go to previous shows that we've done. There's also, I think, a learning library of some sorts where you can go and there's a ton of different articles. Everything's on there. It's just
lots of resources.
Yeah.
Webinars.
Yeah.
7 personal decision points.
Yeah.
You can even order your book through the...
If you go to HansonMcLean.com/book, you'll see our book there, and you fill out a little thing, and you'll give you a 75% off coupon. You can go to Amazon and order it, and that way it's a big savings
just
to you.
Just one more time Amazon comes to your door every day.
Yeah, that's right. Not a drone yet.
No. One more
soon
time.
Soon to be.
One more time. So you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSON. As we talked about at the beginning of the show, there's a new exchange-traded fund that came out. An exchange-traded fund, for those that don't know, it's just another form of a mutual fund.
It's kind of like a mutual fund. People make kind of a big deal about there being the differences between the two.
And I don't think that there are many, and they're not any more or less expensive.
They've been good because they've driven down the cost of investment for everybody.
I would give you that. Yes. I would give you that. But this is a new fund that has come out from the ETF Managers Trust.
Whatever that is.
And they have filed paperwork and it hasn't actually launched yet. And it's the Emerging Agrosphere, the Emerging Agrosphere ETF. So you're thinking, Pat, Scott, what's an agrosphere? Well, my friends, the answer is it's how you invest in medical marijuana productions or products derived from hemp. And they invest in companies in the United States and Canada that are involved in the medical marijuana business. So this is what we would like to call a fad investment, because my guess is it's relatively expensive and it is targeted to a investment fad, which is medical marijuana. Will medical marijuana make sense over the long term? I haven't a clue. All I know is...
And you're not stating whether you like it or not, whether it's a good idea or not a good idea, or what your thoughts are about marijuana.
Well, I absolutely have thoughts about marijuana.
But you're not stating that in this thesis.
But I'm not...
Here.
No, in this thesis, I am stating that I would not invest in this. Am I allowed to state that?
Yes. Well, you could state whatever you want to state.
Well, I am stating that I would not invest in this.
Probably for a variety of reasons you wouldn't invest in it.
Yes, for many
but
reasons.
From the fad standpoint.
Well, let's just... Listen... Do whatever you want with your body. You smoke whatever you want. I don't care. That's my view of the world. But I just don't think it's a good investment. I don't think it's a good investment. I think that it's ripe with all kinds of problems, including the fact that it's against the law.
Still, other than that, against federal law.
It's against federal law. It's against federal law. So, there you go. But now, once again, another fad investment.
I was talking to my sister this week, since she's had a business before. Anyway, she had a business idea, and we're talking about. And I said, you need to look at two things here. One, what's the market potential? Right? How big is the potential market here? And number two, what does the competition look like? Because here's what Business 101 states this. An area where there's some excess profits to be had
will attract capital.
Yes. Other people will enter that space and will drive down the cost, shrinking the profit margins. That's Business 101. So you look at something hot like medical marijuana, Evans, right? It's like, seems like the easy buck.
Yeah. It's not going to be.
No, there's going to be a lot of people who get hurt. I had a family member. I'm not going to state which family member it was. Who got into the prescription, what do you need? Some sort of doctor's referral.
Yeah.
Referral card or something.
Where you go pay the doctor
medical
like $30
card.
Or $40. Well, you point parts of your body.
But it started very expensive. It was something like $150.
Mm-hmm.
I was never that excited about the business, by the way.
Okay.
And I don't, this isn't.
This isn't an endorsement of that business model.
No. And
you could go and get a
marijuana.
So. You're not a, well, thank you for not being a user of medical marijuana.
It's not during the show.
So you would go and pay this doc $150 and he'd write you a script.
It was kind of like a script, but it was $150 and it was only good for a year, and every year it had to get renewed.
Oh.
And at first it was easy money. He took out ads, phone would ring, easy peasy. Then other people saw it as an easy, but suddenly had more competitors. Competitors advertised in the same place. Competitors lowering their price. He had to match the price. And now it got so, I don't even know if he's even in business doing it anymore. It got just.
The price gets driven down.
And
that's just business.
And of course, it's going to be in California.
It's going to be recreational.
And marijuana, and then it's recreational, so it doesn't much matter. But
which I get a kick out of how they could call it a recreation. I guess it's a recreate. I mean, you're recreating.
Sitting around doing nothing?
I don't know, but I guess it's
your
a
brain's frying
recreation.
Away.
But we can't get into that. And do whatever you want with your bongs or your pipes or whatever you're smoking. But don't buy the medical marijuana ETF.
Yeah, whatever you pass. I have no problem. If you want to destroy your life with drugs, just make sure that you don't invest wrong.
Yes. All right. Let's talk
That's basically what you're stating there.
Let's talk to Joel in Redding, California. Joel, thanks for joining Hanson McClain.
Hi, Joel.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
What can we do for you?
I have a question about paying off my home mortgage using Roth IRA funds. I'm sure there's a lot of factors involved. I have a $130,000 mortgage, and I have Roth IRA funds that would cover that.
And how old are you, Joel?
76.
And what's the interest rate on your mortgage?
3%.
And what's the home value?
Probably 250 or more.
And how much money do you have in Roth IRAs?
About 250.
And is there any other assets other than the Roth IRA?
Yes.
Tell us about the rest of it.
And I have a traditional IRA.
And what's in that?
About $300,000.
And are you receiving a monthly pension?
Yes.
And how much?
Almost $900.
And you're on Social Security as well, right?
Yes.
And what's your Social Security?
Wife and I together have about... $1,300.
And are you spending any of this money other than the required minimum distributions out of your IRA?
No, okay. Actually not.
All right.
And do you have any money in the bank to speak of? So you've got money in Roth IRA, which is you've got an extremely large amount in your Roth IRA relative to your IRA.
Yeah,
so.
It does. I thought the same thing.
Yeah. But do you have, outside of your traditional IRA and your Roth IRA, do you have much in the way of savings?
No.
Okay.
Not. No.
Yeah.
How's the money in the Roth? I'm sorry?
Yeah, go ahead.
How's the money in the Roth IRA invested?
It's in mutual funds, Vanguard mutual funds.
How much of it is stock and how much is bond?
It's mostly stock. I'm probably 60-40 in stocks.
Why do you want to do this?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's a good idea.
Okay.
That's why I've called, of course.
You know,
the stock market is high now, and there have been a lot of gains. And do I lock in those gains in something like the mortgage being paid off?
If you could take $120,000 of your Roth, if you came into my office today and said, and I said to you, Joel, I want you to take half your Roth and I want you to invest it in a bond that's going to yield 3% for the rest of your life. What would you say to me?
That's a possibility. I would see this transaction, if it took place, would be like a guaranteed 3%.
That's right.
That's right.
That's exactly it.
That's why I asked the question.
Exactly.
And you're relatively sophisticated. You're not a new investor. My guess is you've been investing for 30-plus years.
Probably,
So you sound relatively sophisticated. Ask yourself that question. And it doesn't have to be an all or nothing either. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this question. Okay. If you didn't have the mortgage payment, what would you do with those additional dollars?
That's something that I've been thinking and kicking around. We'd probably invest it again.
Well, you wouldn't spend it.
I doubt it.
Okay.
It doesn't matter what you do.
Well, it does matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
If he said, my wife's been wanting to go on this trip, and
I'd say
pay off the mortgage.
I'd say pay off the mortgage and spend the money.
But if you're just going to turn around and invest it,
it doesn't matter. It's a academic exercise.
Not really, because taking the Roth IRA, you've got some great promises from Congress. Now, whether Congress changes their promise in the future, we don't know. But as of now, we know that any interest and growth inside that is going to be tax-free, both for himself and his heirs.
As of now.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
As of now.
So, okay, what about tax?
What about tax?
If I pass on to my heirs a house with a mortgage or a house without a mortgage.
Makes no difference. Okay. No difference. No difference.
So, if you were my uncle and we're having this conversation, based on what I've got to know you right now, I'd say don't pay it off.
I'm going to go with you, Scott, on that, because he's a relatively sophisticated investor.
And
he's been doing it a long time. He knew where his portfolio was. He got all that money into the Roth over a period of time.
He's been planning. You're smart at this. Yeah, it's not... If anything, so if you're concerned about the market, I'd say maybe either do a rebalance right now, because obviously the stock market. So just do a rebalance right now.
And bring it down to a 50-50. Bring down
your risk tolerance.
Bring your risk tolerance down both in the IRA and the Roth IRA. And the only reason I would do it is if you would have spent that money that you would have gone into mortgage. If you're just going to turn around and reinvest it, we're just moving stuff around for academic practice.
And if the money were in a money market account,
I would do it.
You'd probably pay it off. But it's in a Roth.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know what it's doing. And you asked yourself the same question we asked, which is, you know, do you want to buy bonds for the rest of your life at 3%? And you said, I'm not certain. And we're going to answer exactly the same way you did. I don't see any big benefit one way or the other.
Okay. Okay, well, I've been kicking this around and wondering whom to ask.
All right, there we go. That's our opinion.
And Joel, one of the things I would recommend is that your living trust or your will, your estate plan is up to date, and I trust it is.
Yep.
I have a feeling.
Okay. Joel's... And let's hope that your kids are as responsible with your money as you are.
All right.
You know, because I had a client years ago tell me that they were pretty conservative, and they got up in years, and they said they always flew first class. I said, really?
You fly first class?
You don't look like you fly
first
class.
Nickel, yeah.
And he said, when I realized my kids would fly first class once they got the money, they decided to.
Okay. All right. Well, this helps. I appreciate it.
I appreciate the call.
Thanks. It's always interesting, Pat. Here, Hanson McLean. You know, we've got lots of different clients with certainly lots of interesting. Every situation's unique.
Yeah, and this was one that you wouldn't expect to tell them not to pay off the mortgage.
Correct.
But it was
after,
all based on...
Obviously, we got to know each other for 6 minutes, so it's...
But I don't think it would change much in a 45-minute conversation or an hour. Just confirm what we saw over that short little period of time. Yeah. Knew exactly where the portfolio was, with risk tolerance. Anyway. Yeah.
So hopefully, if you're listening and you're an investor yourself, you're thinking, have I made those kind of same strategic moves, and am I thinking about the portfolio the same way this guy? He's thinking about the stock market being high.
Yes.
And using it as an opportunity. Not, look how things have done since Trump came into office. Maybe I should be investing more in stocks.
Versus the guy that we told earlier who was about his age to take his money out of his investments and put him in the bank.
That's right.
Right?
So
if that doesn't demonstrate that everyone is an individual with different goals and objectives, I don't know what does.
And the right portfolio is not what's right for your neighbor or your family member. It's what's right for you. And we're all different.
It's the one you'll keep when you don't want to.
Yeah. So, and none of them are easy. They're all challenging challenging things. So, we're going to switch now and go to Real Advice. And during Real Advice, we talked to a Hanson McLain advisor. Hanson McLain's got a team of great certified financial planners and chartered financial analysts and certified fund specialists, etc. And so we talked to an advisor, and they tell us about a situation that they've encountered. Now, keep in mind that the situation that they had encountered with a client is not necessarily one that they would have with you, and you might have a different experience than this person. But Lori is one of our fantastic financial advisors, been with Hanson McLain for over 7 years. And Lori, welcome to Hanson McLain's Money Matters.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being back on our radio program here. So tell us about, the situation you dealt with.
Right. Well, I recently met with a new client. She came in from one of our seminars, but she had just retired at the end of the year in December and was just preparing to get everything in order to make sure she had enough money in retirement. And she was concerned about having an income stream and where her retirement income was going to come from. And particularly, she had met with a previous advisor, actually her current advisor at the time, that had sold her a couple of different annuities. She had done in-service distributions in preparation for retirement into a couple of annuity products. And after attending our seminar, she raised a red flag with her that maybe she should have a second look at purchasing the third annuity with the remainder of her 401k plan employer.
Where did she? Who sold her these annuities? From the bank or what?
Independent advisor. And and so,
Can you hold one second? I'm sorry, Lori.
Yeah.
I'm so tired of the same story.
Right.
Where the people come in and they've already purchased.
And their money's locked up.
And the big fat annuities. That's right. And the money's locked up.
Help me here, and you say, I wish I could, but your money's locked up.
Right. So I don't know this story, but I know this story.
So continue.
But I'm glad we were able to help her before she gave all of her money to this advisor. Anyway, Lori,
advisor is a strong term for an annuity salesman.
Thank you for letting me vent.
Right. And, in addition to the concern about liquidity that we have with annuities, there was an extenuating circumstance, I think, in what she was invested in, and that some of these equity index annuities have, strategy, buckets or strategy, indexes that they follow. So sometimes in her case, she was allocated then her risk tolerance really lent itself. And these strategies she was locked into for at least the next, we determined, 18 months that we can't reallocate, reduce risk in that portfolio for her until, there's the window opening or the time that they'll allow us to then rebalance that portfolio to a proper strategy that meets her investment objective.
So these annuity contracts are so complicated. This is a new one to us. Pat and I are looking at each other.
So you've got different equity buckets inside the annuity that actually have lockups inside of a lockup.
So she can't reduce her risk in this for another 18 months.
Right.
Which makes sense because they're buying options in the market. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, she was one of the allocations she had in one portfolio was 25% to a declared rate, which was 1% interest rate, and then 25% to the S&P index. 25% to the Euro Stoxx 50 index, and then the remaining 25% to the Hang Seng index. So about 50% of the portfolio.
Mm-hmm. How is this not considered? How could this person not be licensed?
Here's the amazing thing. These equity annuity products are licensed through state Department of Insurance regulators. Life insurance agents can sell these without being securities licensed. It's amazing.
Even though they're making the recommendations on the underlying indexes. All right. Well, this isn't why Lori called. Lori called to tell a story about a client And so, please, Lori.
Right. So when I met with her, you know, her main concerns, like I said, were, you know, retirement income, a stream for her and how she was going to meet her retirement income needs, which we had determined. She's a widow, and she was receiving a veteran's pension from her late husband. She also was receiving survivor benefits from Social Security. And then we were looking at how we're going to take the money from IRA 401k to, you know, meet her retirement income needs. So we were able to roll over the remainder of her funds into a more liquid portfolio so we could create that income stream for her. And then in determining how she was invested in these annuity contracts, kind of developed a long-term strategy for her on how we can either rebalance those to put those in line with her investment objective and utilize the free, you know, either 10% or in one case 7% free amount she was allowed to take out per year in those contracts to create liquidity for her, because she had no other sources of income or investments to provide her some discretionary income needs as well.
Did she go on social? Did you say she went on widow's Social Security benefit?
Yes,
she did. And she could stay on that till age 70 and then switch to her own. Is that
correct?
Okay.
Either at full retirement age. She's 64 now, so she had been receiving that. She's going to either wait until full retirement age and or to 70. We're looking at how we can create that income flow for her to meet her income needs.
And Lori, how long were the surrender charges on these equity index annuities?
One 12 years and one 13 years.
Wow.
That's awful.
All right. Well, at least you helped her with the strategy with those. Right. I mean,
right. Well, and now she's a client, so she's getting, you know, in our opinion, I guess, good advice, and we're putting her on the path to where she clearly now knows what she has. She does. We're able to, you know, meet her, put a plan together to meet her retirement income needs, and I think that now she has a clear picture, at least that she's getting good advice, and she's not going to run out of money, and we can certainly work around the restrictions and those annuities for her, so eventually we can get the money out of those contracts.
So. So what Lori did with this client is the same that we do with all our clients, is we bring them through the 7 personal decision points. We look to see where they're at, where they want to go, and how to get there.
Yeah.
We look at the tax implications and income sources. And one of these was a widow's benefit on Social Security. And Social Security is a hard thing to navigate.
And particularly in a case like that.
And particularly in a case like this.
Well, hey, Lori, thank you for being part of the program today. And thanks for being at Hanson McLean for so many years.
Hey, thank you for having me. My pleasure.
All right, thanks, Lori. You know, it's not that all insurance companies are evil, because they're certainly not. And when you hear cases like this, a widow's, someone had her take money out of her 401k while she's still working and put her in a product where her money's locked up, one contract 12 years, another contract 13 years. So you're nearing retirement. Your money's being locked up 13 years.
13 years.
So the reason that we say we hate equity index annuities is not that there might be a product out there that could be used in the right circumstances. It's that they're so misused.
And the average consumer can't tell good from bad.
And the average person selling them doesn't even understand these things.
Yeah. But I wouldn't buy anything that I knew I couldn't get out of for 13 years.
You would if a good salesperson sold it to you.
No, I don't care how good they are. It's a shame. It really is a shame. It is a shame.
Well, I found it amazing that you can't change your strategy.
That was a new one to me. So,
they almost look like variable annuities.
Kind of, but they have some sort of underlying guarantee in them.
You know who they're good for?
Yes.
Insurance companies and the salespeople who sell them.
Yes. Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And the reality is Scott, that, and you know this as well as I do, that they're not being regulated correctly. They're not being regulated.
They should not be
regulated by the Department of Insurance.
No.
They should be regulated by the Department of Insurance, but also by the FINRA and the SEC, because they are a security.
A number of years ago, they tried to, the regulators tried to take over this part, and the insurance industry lobbied so hard and said, no, we're regulated by the states. You have no jurisdictions over us. But the more and more these things look like, and now hopefully it's someone, we broadcast out of Sacramento, which is the state capital of California. And I know that we have government employees listen to our program because they call, and people who, so hopefully someone from the Department of Insurance is listening, or some from the Department of Corporations can hear things like this and say, you know,
maybe we should look at this.
Maybe there's something I could do in my role as an employee in a regulatory body to help out these consumers.
Let's hope.
Because I don't know who else is doing it. And So
one of the things that actually is on the calendar for the SEC is to redefine the accredited investors, which is right now for small investments in non-publicly traded investments, you need to be an accredited investor.
So as an example, you've got a friend that comes up with has a new business startup. They want to raise some money through friends and family.
And they say, hey, will you invest $100,000? Right now, you need to be accredited to invest those dollars legally.
Yeah, and accredited means that you have to have a certain amount of income and a certain amount of net worth.
And what the SEC is considering is to lower that income and that net worth. You can get around the accredited investor income and net worth by education alone. You can get around it if you could show that you're actually educated
enough.
Well,
that's what it should be.
And that's what it should be. It shouldn't be necessarily, but it should look at your investment history and most certainly
and
your education around
investments. And I have mixed feelings
about
this because I see sometimes there's some opportunities that I would think, you know, just because someone doesn't have the assets today, why is the big arm of government telling them they can't invest in something?
I worry about people getting ripped off.
But the other part of me worries about getting people ripped off.
I worry about people getting ripped off. That's what I worry about.
That's why these laws are here. It's not
to protect the guy that
if you've got millions of dollars and he leaves $100,000,
it hurts, but it's
not going to change your life.
Yeah, but it's the guy that has
$40,000 and you lose your $40,000. That will change your life.
It makes a big difference. So I am actually against them changing the. If you're going to spend any time, don't make it easier for the uneducated investor or them without a high net worth to invest. Go where it matters and try to regulate things that are being sold to widows on a daily basis, which are high cost indexed annuities.
Yeah, so anyway, we are out of time. We are here every weekend at the same time, so make sure you tune us in. You could also get a podcast of this program. Go to HansomMcLain.com. You can sign up for the podcast. Plus, there's a bunch of other great information at HansomMcLain.com. Maybe schedule a time to meet with one of our advisors. Anyway, we'll see you next week. Have a great rest of the weekend.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.